Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to another episode of Sour Craps. I am your host, as always, Alex Pulowski. And everything sucks, except it sucks a little less today, August 1st. Happy August to everyone. Almost 5 long months of the new world order, and not that one from the wrestling. There's a new version of the world where we all have to try to be safe and stuff. Can't believe it's August already. And I also can't believe that SmackDown did good things. Hold on, let me check my notes. SmackDown did good things. That's really rare. That never happens. So let's talk about the good things and the bad things. It's never always good. It's never all good. Sometimes it's all bad, but it's never all good. You know that saying, it's all good in the hood? It's never all good in the SmackDown hood. Occasionally, it's partially good in the SmackDown hood. We're going to start out with, again, which has become now the SmackDown staple, where everybody that's going to do something, well, most people are going to do something like get a little backstage promo time before the show starts to remind you that they're going to be on the show and what's going to be coming up to what you're going to watch. And this time it's starts out with John Morrison and The Miz don't seem to think that Big E has a good singles career ahead of him. They have some of that, something in common with Booker T on that fact. So I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. But Big E also, he does some shenanigans, some stuff backstage. Big E is delightful. Lacey Evans cuts some little promo about, like, you know, Naomi deserves better. Well, that little nasty is gonna get what she deserves from me when I beat her in the ring tonight. And then Naomi cuts a lackluster baby face promo. It's not her forte. Grand Metalik does his whole thing entirely in Spanish. And yeah, I know it's Hulu, you know, because I watched it on DVR, so they didn't actually have anybody do it in time, but I'd like to know what the full translation was, because under him, they just said speaking Spanish, and I was like, well, I got that part. And then the speaking Spanish part stayed on the screen through most of AJ Styles' promo. And I was just like, I highly doubt that. If I was watching this on mute and I saw speaking Spanish under AJ Styles, I'd be like, nope, I don't believe you. I'm going to use that Anchorman GIF in that particular moment. Anyway, the night. First, big thing. We don't get the, are you ready for a good time? We don't get that last night. Listen, I think we did. We get right into a Firefly Funhouse with Bray Wyatt coming out. He's like pulling, like, you know, water plants off of his sweater, like he was just looking in the swamp for Braun Strowman, because we haven't seen him since he got pulled into the swamp by the Fiend, which is like almost 2 weeks ago. He's missing in action. And Wyatt says, well, part of Strowman Street will always be there, even if the Gators got him. He says that, listen, I never wanted to hurt Braun Strowman. Me, Bray Wyatt, I never did. This version of him. But the Fiend wants something you have. And, like, I've never been a big into the Fiend being the kind of wrestler who wants to be champion. I know the whole thing is everybody should want to be champion, but there have to be some exceptions to that rule when you're putting together characters that are almost literally demons from hell. I don't know what the demon from hell would stand to gain by being champion as opposed to not being champion. But I do believe that the Fiend is still pissed from having to put over Goldberg. And he wants his title back that he never should have lost. I believe that. That makes sense. That tracks. And then, you know, does the let me in thing. And then he says, bye. And we all think that's the last we're going to see of the Fiend or Bray Wyatt on the episode. And I don't know if you've watched the episode yet, but we were wrong. And we'll talk about that. Oh boy, we're going to talk about that at the end of this thing. That'll be great. Intercontinental title match, Grand Metalik versus AJ Styles. AJ Styles works over Grand Metalik's leg, so he can't do the ropey stuff that he normally does, at least not as well. So AJ's able to counter with a lot of cool stuff, and he wins. Like he wins. He puts Metalik in the calf crusher and taps him out. It was a fun match. It was kind of cool to watch AJ work against a guy like Metalik, and it's always great to watch Metalik. It's a pleasure to watch him at all times. He's very unique in the way that he approaches his style of wrestling. So I'm into it. He was so great in the Cruiserweight Classic. I guess I'm glad he got this shot, but nobody thought he was going to win. So after the match, AJ cheap shots Lince Dorado, who's out there with Metalik, or Matalik. And that's AJ Styles. In the promo he cut before the show, he says, tonight I'm facing Grand Matalik. And I don't know, like Metalik. Metallic, dude. It's the Spanish word for metallic. Matalik. Anyway, he hits Vince Lince with a Styles Clash. And everyone's booing AJ. Boo, AJ, boo. We need to talk about eventually about I've let it slide and not brought it up a while the canned noise. Like I've been watching the new NBA. It's back. Go Bucks. And I don't mind the crowd noise there. It sounds like a little dull roar. It's kind of just to make it feel like it's not silent there. And I understand, but there are no fans at the NBA games. You have your PC kids there. You know, in the audience, but I'm gonna guess there's maybe 30 of them there, and you definitely have piped in some crowd noise of, I'm gonna say at least 100 people, going, yay, boo, yay, ha 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 ha, boo, yay. And I think what I read was the idea was they were playing that stuff so that the PC kids would hear it and know when to cheer or when to boo. And like, oh, this is like your, This is like watching an applause sign on those old game shows. Like, oh, this is when we're supposed to applaud. It's like that. Sometimes it's not as noticeable as other times, but sometimes it's really noticeable. A while back, but right before he lost that unsanctioned match, Big Show cut a promo in the backstage. And if you go back and watch it, which by all means don't, but if you go back and watch it, they play a looped crowd track underneath him. Now, when there are actual fans in actual arenas and they play a promo from backstage on the Titantron, the fans in the arena react to it, and that sound is played on the broadcast. But if you taped this promo ahead of time, you don't need to play fake crowd noise underneath it, especially if you're going to loop like a 30-second clip on a 4-minute promo. So every 30 seconds we hear the same guy go, "But it's bad." And literally 30 seconds later we hear, like, it's the same specific cadence of whatever that guy is yelling, and the same pitch and the same tempo. It's unmistakable that they're running a 30-second clip over and over again during like a 4-minute promo, and it doesn't work. So, backstage, this is something that's interesting to me. Backstage, Corbin, who has been the hardest of everybody on Chad Gable, was so hard on him about being short that Chad Gable, in kayfabe, had to give himself the nickname Shorty G to get over being short, to claim it as though it was something. I am proud to be short. Short people unite. Shorty G is my name. What is your name?
My name is Bob Benjamin.
Well, then you shall be Shorty B.
I'm 5'9".
Shorty B is your name, and Shorty G is my name. Hooray for short people everywhere.
I mean, we talked about this at the time, but Chad Gable is the average height for men in the world. Now, is he shorter than Baron Corbin? Yes. Is he shorter than most wrestlers? Yes. Is he shorter than most men? No. He is average height. It's weird. But anyway, Corbin says, "Hey, dude. I'm looking at you, and I feel like you're not getting a fair shake, and blah blah blah." And Chad Gable, Mr. G, as it were, says, "Hey, what is this? What are we, friends now? You used to be so merciless with all these jokes, and you know, Corbin's like, yeah, listen, it's fine. I just feel like you've been coming up short. Whoa, whoa, whoa! I didn't mean to say that one. I feel like you've been overlooked. Whoa, that was a mistake. That was just a turn of phrase. I'm sorry." I just think that it sucks that somebody can come in, some barefoot Yahoo, come in and take all your thunder. You were an Olympian. But people should be treated with more respect. And we leave thinking that Chad Gable is like, okay, whatever, Baron. Sure. Thanks for the pep talk. But he does say, Corbin says, listen, you know, if you wanted to take out Matt Riddle, I'd be fine with it, and the king's ransom would be yours. And, yeah, so Gable has to think about it at the time.
So we see video package from the bar fight, and Jeff Hardy comes out. He's walking around backstage. Everyone's greeting him. Hey, Jeff, it's good to see you. I'm glad you're not dead. What was that thing, though, Jeff, when you I wanted somebody, like Otis. Well, not Otis, because Otis would just say, "Hoo yee!" But I want maybe Tucker. Tucker's a good guy to do this. Hey, Jeff, real cool question. You know how you were laying unconscious on the floor and there was a hat over your face? And then Sheamus took the hat away and you were wearing makeup all of a sudden and white contacts? How did you do that? It'd be nice to have somebody acknowledge it, considering they portrayed it in their TV show, and it's really highly unusual for that bit of magic to happen in the real world, which is ostensibly where this show takes place. So it might be nice to have somebody bring it up. I don't know. Anyway, so because we've all been so mean to the WWE, we've been saying, hey, it's not fair. It's not cool that you're making Jeff go through all this in this storyline. It's not okay that you would use his alcoholism and his real struggles in his recovery from multiple relapses. It's not cool for you to put that on TV for all of us to get entertainment from. It's not cool. I'll bet you deep down inside, Jeff's not cool with it either. Well, to counteract that argument, they had Jeff come out and say, I feel so good because I beat Sheamus, and I feel like now I'm never going to let anybody down again. And now, because I've said that, because I've said that I feel so good, and this continued sobriety is going to be a change, but I really believe, this continuing sobriety is going to be a challenge. But I really believe that I'm going to get through it, and I'll never let down the fans or my family ever again. There's a good chance that he will relapse. And then they can just point to this little promo saying, no, see, it was cool. It wasn't us. He was cool with it. He said he was cool with it, and actually winning this feud versus Sheamus by beating him in a bar fight where he came back from the dead wearing face paint, doing all that like made him feel better about being an alcoholic. And also it made him really want to prove that this is the time that he's going to do it. So if he doesn't, if he has a relapse, if he drives drunk, if he causes some horrible tragedy, it's not our fault. He signed off on it. And here this fucking promo is the proof. It's a little, it's like him signing a waiver on national television that he will not hold his employers accountable for driving him to drink and break his sobriety. I mean, that's what this was. But I mean, I guess Jeff delivered it kind of well. Whatever. I hope for the best for Jeff Hardy, and I hope that if he really wants to stay sober. That's amazing. I have a very good friend of mine who's been sober now for 8 years. And that is really tough. He tells me about it, that it's so tough. But every day is a struggle. And you can do it. You can be sober for years and years and years. You can give it up. You can do that. But not everybody can. And people get triggered by the weirdest stuff. So it is kind of weird that they had him come out here and say, this has been very, very therapeutic for me.
this whole thing where I was framed for vehicular manslaughter. By the way, what's the deal with that? Are we ever going to make an arrest on that one? No? That's weird, right? It's weird that the whole thing started with attempted vehicular manslaughter and framing another man for that thing. And then the guy who did it gets no comeuppance besides being swantoned in a bar. That's the only thing. That's his punishment for nearly murdering a dude with a car and making it look like another dude did the crime. His punishment is being swantoned inside of Irish Shannons. That's weird, right? I'm not the only one who thinks that's weird. Anyway, I'm sure the cops have forgotten all about it. It's not even really that big of a crime or crimes. Attempted vehicular manslaughter, fleeing the scene of a crime, and framing another guy for those things seems like something you might be in trouble for, is all I'm saying. Anyway, Jeff gets interrupted by King Corbin. I keep talking about your sobriety and your recovery and your alcoholism, and I think my head is going to explode. You're supposed to be the charismatic enigma. So what's with all the crying and the whining? I think Corbin's fine at a lot of things. Giving these canned promos word for word to get brownie points with the people who keep him on screen and the focal point of major storylines just doesn't ring true. Talks about how Matt Riddle's disrespecting him and now he's got to face Drew. He has to face Drew Gulak. Oh, the temerity of it all. I feel like I'm losing my mind. Maybe my kingdom is an insane asylum. And Jeff says, like, you know, hey, you know what I've learned in alcoholism? Maybe if everybody's got a problem with you, the actual problem is you. It's true. But then Corbin just keeps running his mouth, and then Gulak attacks Corbin from behind, and we go to commercial, come back. Match is already underway. This is a match. It's a match that happens. It's a match that happened. And the big deal only happens is when Corbin hits a deep six, and then Matt Riddle's music hits because this is SmackDown, after all, and you got to do shit like this. It can't all be good. Gulak takes advantage of the distraction to try to do for a roll up, and Corbin kicks out, and he hits the end of days and wins. So Riddle rushes into the ring and decides to attack King Corbin. And then Shorty G shows up. Chad Gable. And I believe that part of what this is, this little Shorty G is turning Shorty heel. Get it? Part of what this is allowing them to not have to call him Shorty G anymore, because you can't call the heel Shorty G. That's a laughing stock. Although with this company, you never know. So yeah, Gable runs and attacks Matt Riddle.
and does his chaos theory, his rolling German suplex, which Riddle takes from fantastically. And Gable is like, you know, hey, where's my money? And so they leave together. But it would be really interesting to have Corbin use Gable like old school Dean Malenko, like the Shooter. Like, his heavy is a dude half his size because he's a fucking pit bull. He's a Tasmanian devil. He goes in there and he hurts people. I'd be down for that side of Chad Gable. I'd definitely be down for him not being called Shorty G anymore. And this might have come about because of that amazing social media promo that he created himself after he beat Mojo Rawley, and Michael Cole was like, what an upset! And his promo was like, it's not an upset for me to beat Mojo Rawley. It's Mojo Rawley, and it's me. I was an Olympian. I beat guys like Mojo Rawley in my fucking sleep. And so maybe that, which was just supposed to be like a badass babyface, like I'm not going to take any prisoners type of a thing, I think. But they said, well, then you have to be a heel now. And Gable's like, do I have to be called Shorty G anymore? Then yeah, I'll be a heel. I hope that's part of the bargain. But again, Corbin using Gable as like ECW era Malenko, where he can just go in and like shoot in, take somebody's knee apart in like that. That'd be awesome. I'd be so here for that. So yeah, we get Biggie versus The Miz. And here's where we're going to talk about something. Biggie's getting a singles push. Good for him. It's long overdue. But Booker T, who can't seem to not talk about younger wrestlers currently, and especially black wrestlers, he said this week, I think Big E's going to have to shed a few things in order for people to look at him like the world champion. And I don't know if it's the gear, maybe some forms of the gear, the colors as well. Because you can't have sky blue and pink and be a world champion. Although, except for there was that other guy who was really close friends with Big E, and he was the world champion, and he got over really well with the crowd, and everyone loved him, and then Vince made a stupid decision to have him lose the title in 7 seconds, but that was not that guy's fault. And it seemed like the unicorn stuff and the blue and the pink, that didn't hold that guy back. That's weird. Anyway, he goes on. People will say, oh, he shouldn't change anything, so I'm not going to sit here and say, just because I don't want the internet going off or saying, Booker T saying he needs to do this, just like Matt Riddle needs to put on a pair of boots. Well, that's another story. So add Booker T to the growing list of people, along with probably what, JBL probably, who think that Matt Riddle can't possibly get over if he's barefoot. Did I say barefoot? Barefoot. Ridiculous. I just think Big E still trying to be the New Day is not going to work for him as far as working at the top of the card. I'm talking about being a main attraction. I'm whatever. Listen. Booker T, shut up. I don't know what it is. I don't know why you feel like the need to tear people down, but if you look at Big E and think that no matter what he's wearing, how he behaves outside of the ring, if you think in the ring he's anything less than a deserving world champion, you're not fucking paying attention. So, all these comments come out before last night. How does Big E react to that? He comes out wearing his pinkest and bluest gear and rolls down the ring ramp, and then throws his cloak thing at Corey Graves, like he always does. This is the way it's supposed to happen. The whole time,
This match is going on. And this match versus The Miz lasts a long time. I don't know what it is about Vince, about anybody else who works for him up at the top who's making decisions. This obsession they have with big, badass, beefy boys who are baby faces having to work from underneath when they should just pick up a dude and yeet him into the sun. It doesn't make sense. Like, if you want to do your whole build a guy who, like, if you want to use Mustafa Ali or Daniel Bryan or somebody like that to, like, show, okay, well, listen, look how small he is. He's got to work against the odds, you know, in order to come back and make and get a victory. Great. But it doesn't work when the dude's the size of Big E, when he's as strong as we know Big E is. To have him, like, struggle against The Miz, and I don't care how much interference Morrison was throwing at him, that you should have shrugged all that shit off, although the one time where Morrison just ran up the steps and then, like, cartwheel kicked off the steps onto Big E on the outside, that was pretty dope. But the entire time they're talking about this, and also the thing they're talking about, Miz has done all, Miz didn't done it all. Like, he's been an Intercontinental Champion, he's a world champion, he's done everything. I just don't know if Big E's got it in him to be a singles wrestler. I just don't know. I don't know if it's possible. He was the Intercontinental Champion like 7 years ago, right? He was a singles wrestler before he was in the New Day. He was IC champion. He was the NXT champion. He had a badass thing in NXT where he insisted that the ref not count a three for him to win. He said, I want to win with a five count. So if a guy kicks out at four, normally that would be enough to, for somebody else to beat him. But I think I can make a guy stay down for five, not just three. Like, it was his whole deal in NXT. And he was the IC champion 2013 to 2014. So calling him like he's a tag wrestler and that's all he can do because he's never worked in singles before is a lie. And a kind of obvious lie since, you know, you have a fucking network where anybody could look this shit up. But it doesn't fit your narrative. Your narrative is that Big E can't possibly be a single star because he's a tag wrestler when he's already been a singles champion in both NXT and in WWE. But one thing is that is great. And Miz is a very good dance partner for Big E here, but Big E should not have struggled for as long as he did with. Like, I know that they do the thing where Braun Strowman is, you know, tipping over ambulances and stuff, but they could do that angle, that gimmick. They could have done it with Big E, and it would be no less believable. Look at that man's chestal area. Look at his thighs. Look at his deltoids. Look at his biceps. That man is so frigging strong. So when they put John Morrison or The Miz in the ring one-on-one with Braun Strowman, and Braun Strowman just clubbers them all over the place, in wins in 2 minutes, but Big E struggles for 15 minutes or whatever it was with The Miz. I know what you're trying to do. It's a stupid thing to try to do. Don't do that. But what is great is Big E wins via submission with the stretch muffler. Look it up. It's crazy. You wrap the dude's leg around your neck and stand up. So all the body weight is pulling on their ACL as it's stretched across your back. Ooh, that's good. And yeah, Miz had to tap out to it. Good stuff. It's good that Big E is winning and they're pushing him in some way. I'm so worried that they're going to screw it up. Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura are celebrating becoming the champs 2 weeks ago. They're having a champion celebration. And then Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik show up. Lince Dorado and Grand Metalik, you know, having just been beaten up by AJ Styles earlier in the night. I guess they're not out for revenge, especially Lince, who got cheap shotted and then Styles clashed for no fucking reason. Apparently, like I, when that happened, I thought, oh, I guess they're going to do a non-title or like maybe the next title defense that AJ has between now and SummerSlam will be against Lince Dorado. But because there aren't any other tag teams on SmackDown, the Lucha House Party have to be the tag challengers. So yeah, they show up and then Nakamura and Cesaro make fun of them for not being champions, and they're not allowed at their champions party. Okay, hey, Sheamus is backstage. He says that he made a mistake in the bar fight was by having it the mistake I made in having a fight with Jeff Hardy in a bar. Was having a fight with Jeff Hardy in a bar. Sorry, that was not Sheamus. That was Brad Pitt from Snatch. But yeah, he says that the reason that Jeff Hardy was powered by alcohol, just being around alcohol made him a stronger fighter, which seems to be the exact opposite thing that you were saying about him before, that he was so reliant on alcohol that he wasn't a good fighter anymore. So I don't understand how that works. He's just delusional. But the good thing about this is that he does say that he says, I was in a handicap match versus Jeff and alcohol, which doesn't make fucking sense. But he says, so it's no shame in me losing the match. But the thing about this is that Jeff Hardy is not my problem anymore. Because now the locker room has me as a problem. So what this is good is that it gets Sheamus away from Jeff Hardy forever. What this is bad is that they still haven't arrested Sheamus. I need you to open a full investigation into Sheamus. Arrest the guy who almost killed Elias. We haven't seen Elias yet. I'm assuming Elias is going to come back and he's going to have a feud with Sheamus. That's the only thing that makes sense. But whatever. Hey, here's the thing. Here's the thing that happened. Oh, boy. So Lacey comes out for her match with Naomi, and she says, everybody, I don't need somebody, all you nasties, to make a hashtag for me. You're nasties. Everybody, she's a nasty, and you're all nasties too. And if you really want it, you think she was first served better, you want to have a pity party for Naomi. Well, I'm going to make everyone really feel sorry for her tonight. And she actually laughs like this. Now, I don't know anything about this, but they turned Lacey Evans babyface
in the late summer, early fall of last year, right? Fall last year. Never worked. It was such a colossal failure that less than a year later, like three quarters of a year later, really, they've completely given up on it. Which is hard. Because they said, you're going to cheer for her because you are patriotic. Because this woman is a mom, which is the most important thing a woman can be in America. According to Vince, I mean, you know. And also a Marine. You know, wow, so she's a tough mother. I get it. So you're gonna cheer for her because support the troops. And we love moms. We love moms who are also troops. And it didn't work. I mean, I don't know how much of it would have been different if there had been actual fans, say around Memorial Day, that they could have exploited. I don't know. But I know they never decided. They decided not to do anything with her when they pushed her. They didn't give her a title. It was a weird thing for them to do. So, perhaps Lacey is resentful for having her babyface push ended, handled so poorly at the beginning, and now just the rug pulled out from under her. So she's rebelling against playing this villain character by playing it so bad and over the top, by playing it like some kind of cartoon. Like, she comes out with the, she was always wearing the stupid fucking hat, but the stupid fucking hat, and she's dabbing herself all over with her damn handkerchief, and she laughs like, because that's how villains laugh, apparently. But then Naomi comes to the ring. There was a good, really good moment. I mean, scary, because I still don't really trust Lacey in the ring. But Naomi went for a jumping head scissors, and Evans just said, nope, I'm going to powerbomb you instead. And I thought that was really good. That was good. So she's just working over Naomi the whole time, the whole match. She traps Naomi's hair in the steel steps. This obsession that Lacey has with Naomi's hair is emblematic of something. Look it up. But anyway, Naomi just gets dominated for most of this match, except for the fact that the way Naomi lost the match, where she deserved better, was that Lacey wrapped her hair around the ring ropes, and then Naomi turned around and got the woman's right, and that was how she lost. In this one, Evans tries to wrap her hair around the turnbuckle thing, the ropes, and Naomi unwraps it, turns around, ducks the woman's right into a backslide, and wins via backslide. So at least she got her win back in this feud that's going to go on forever. But here's why I think they should cancel this feud. Oh, Lord. Naomi catches Evans with a big kick and knocks her to the floor, and then Naomi runs out and she slides out between the first and the second rope, I think, and she's trying to hit some kind of sunset bomb or a code red, a Canadian destroyer, if you will, but it's botched horribly, and it is not all Lacey Evans' fault.
It's mostly Lacey Evans' fault.
But it's not all Lacey Evans' fault. These two have terrible chemistry in the ring. It doesn't work. It's not clicking. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes two amazing wrestlers don't mesh well in the ring. I'm not saying either one of these are amazing wrestlers, but I'm saying it's not their fault. If you decide you're going to put two wrestlers who don't mesh well in the ring, you're going to put them in a feud that is dangerous optically and politically with a woman who has a Jim Crow era racist, I'm going to say it, racist gimmick up against a very black and proud woman. That is a recipe for disaster to begin with. And then you have them not working very well together in the ring. It's all a bad idea. Just don't do it. Have this be the last match. Naomi got her win back. We can move on. It was started over a stupid karaoke competition that shouldn't have happened to begin with in the first place. Bailey's going to need a new challenger. Just move. Move Naomi over there and have her feud with Bailey. I think they could do some good stuff together. It's better than whatever they would do with Lacey Evans. But goddamn, that move looked horrible. Like, Naomi was a little out of control, and Lacey did not know when to jump. She didn't get enough to help the move get over. Like, it was just not good. Not good. Then Lacey Evans yells at Corey Graves to start a hashtag, Lacey deserves better. Ha, 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 ha. So, remember they said last week, Otis is back and Manny going to be back too. So, here's what happens. Mandy Rose says it feels like it was a long time since I had a proper date. She booked the table at Otis's favorite barbecue spot. Kids, don't eat at restaurants. Don't eat at restaurants, especially the way that Mandy Rose has done it, where she's booked a table in the back. So inside, do not eat indoors at restaurants. If you have to, make sure they have a patio or something. It's fucking summer. If you have to, eat at a restaurant, eat outside. Jesus Christ. You bad role models, Mandy. But they're gonna go to Otis's favorite barbecue spot. And he goes, "Ooh, yee." And she said, "Hey, we're gonna have some ribs." And she goes, "Oh yeah." And we're gonna have some steaks. She goes, "Oh yeah. Oh, Mandy, we're going to have some dessert." She goes, "Oh, yeah. I thought we would have peach cobbler or something like that." Oh, my peach. Let's see. When she's describing her because she's a peach. So she's going to put the chocolate sauce on herself and the whipped cream on herself. Get it? And Otis is going to lick it off of her naked body. I put that image in your mind because it's in my mind now. And nothing will ever get it out. It's a horrifying thing. Why would you do that to your audience? Anyway, he says, "I'll meet you back here. I'm going to go get ready for us to go on our date." Why is Otis at the performance center? Otis is back. Otis is back doing what? Being asked out on a date by his girlfriend? If you have Otis back at the performance center and you have him and Tucker win a squash match against two jobbers that in a minute and a half, great. And then as he's headed to the showers, have Mandy stop him and say, "Here's what we're going to do. To celebrate your win, we're going to go out." You say Otis is back. Otis is back doing what? He showed up at the performance center where there's been a fucking COVID outbreak to get asked on a date by his girlfriend? How does that make any sense? Have him come back and cut a promo about, you know, hey, don't forget I got the Money in the Bank briefcase here. Oh, yeah. And I'm going to use it on Braun Strowman if he ever gets out of the swamp. Have him do that. What the hell is he there for? Why did you bring him to the Performance Center if you didn't have anything for him to do? You literally didn't have anything for him to do. Because this thing, this segment isn't a scheduled part of anything. There's not a backstage promo. It's not a match. It's not an in-ring interview. It's just him happening to be backstage in front of a camera when his girlfriend asks him out on a date. That's not a reason you bring a man to the Performance Center. Anyway, Mandy is headed to her dressing room to get ready for her big date. And when we see behind her, Sonya Deville. Psycho Sonya is the best. The best. You know how this is an old joke, that when a plane goes down, there's a big crash, you look for the black box. Because the black box will tell you what happened. Was it mechanical failure? Pilot error? Did it get hit by a goose? What was the thing that brought the plane down? The black box will tell you. And a black box always survives the crash. So the joke has always been, why can't they make the whole plane out of the black box? Why can't they make the whole SmackDown out of the Psycho Sonya Deville? Jesus. This was compelling and disturbing and felt fucking real. Sonya Deville, my God. Like, listen. On SmackDown, you have Sonya Deville. I'm going to keep it at her. Below her is Naomi. Okay? You have those two. Right? On Raw, you have Shayna Baszler and Bianca Belair and Asuka. Those are the women right now. Those five on the main roster who are not horsewomen, those five used properly could carry a women's division on their own. I still feel like in the next couple of years, if they wind up on the same brand together, I think Sonya Deville and Shayna Baszler could hold the tag belts for a fucking year and a half. Just them egging each other on, like trying to one up each other. How fast can you make yours tap out versus how fast can I make mine tap out? Let's get up both of our opponents in the ring at the same time. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go. That'd be so fucking great. What I'm saying is, Sonya Deville needs to be a future multi-time champion, whether it's tag champion or women's champion. She has it. This was fucking great. She attacks Mandy Rose from behind. You ruined my life, whatever. And she because Mandy's putting on lipstick. So Sonya takes it and like scrawls all over her face and smashes her face into the concrete. Because of the lipstick, it like is that blood? I can't tell if that's blood or is that lipstick, which is very effective. Then she takes out a pair of scissors and just starts chopping off Mandy Rose's hair. You know, obviously they're doing this as part of an angle. Mandy Rose is going to have a new haircut the next time we see her. And also her roots she really needed a dye job. So I think that they're waiting for her to have this thing where she gets her hair cut before they did the thing because the roots did not look good. But she's just cutting all the hair off and everything. She's just saying terrible things to Mandy and beating her up still along the way. And then she finds a pair of like clippers, like you would use to buzz your head, like I buzz my head. And she turns them on and says,
is that she's going to go after, she's going to shave Mandy Rose's head. And I thought they were actually going to do it. I was like, that's bold. And she gets stopped. But what I love is she gets stopped by referees and she holds up the buzzers like she's going to stab somebody with them. Like it's a friggin' knife. She's lost it. This Psycho Sonya is fucking great. I love it. It's so, so good. She says, she grabs up Mandy Rose's hair off the ground. She says, I got what I want. I'm leaving. And Adam Pearce is there. Adam Pearce, good for you for getting over the COVID. Happy for you. He says, get the hell out of here. And she's like, I got what I want and I'm leaving. Everybody's tending to her. I want to say really quickly, good for you, Mandy Rose. Like, the knock on Mandy Rose has always been that she's a perfect Barbie doll. Like, she's Vince's wet dream come to life, right? That's what she represents as a wrestler. That's always been the knock on her, right? That she's all look and nothing else. She's gotten a lot better in the ring. I really love her running knee thing that she does. She's gotten a lot better. She's going to continue to get better. But this, being saying, I want to do this, let's do this. I'm assuming she was like, yes, I'm all for it. Because if they were like, hey, we want to cut your hair. And she's like, I don't know. And then they like strong arm her into doing it. Then fuck this company. No, seriously, fuck this company. But if she's in on it, like she's like saying, yes, this is great. I want to do this. It's going to help my character. It is going to help her character because she's going to come out looking completely different. She's not going to have the long blonde hair. She's going to do something drastic with her hair. She's going to look different. Subjecting herself to this kind of beating on camera to get over Sonya Deville as Psycho Sonya. That takes fucking guts, and I'm here for it, and I appreciate it. That's really great. Anyway, they go back, they go briefly to Michael Cole, but she sends us right back to Kayla Braxton, which is weird. It feels like it was supposed to happen after a commercial, but there was no commercial. So the trainers are looking on, checking on Mandy Rose, and Otis and Tucker are there. Cool. But Miz and John Morrison are there. They're cracking jokes about, like, they're making a lot of hair puns. And then Tucker runs them off. So we're going to get, so John Morrison and the Miz, because we're running low on heels, I guess, in different angles. In recent storylines, the Miz and John Morrison have been tag champs, lost the titles to the New Day. They've challenged Braun Strowman to a 2-on-1 handicap match. They lost that. John Morrison was henching for Baron Corbin as the first opponent for Matt Riddle. Then they went back and John Morrison had another match versus Braun Strowman, 1-on-1 match where he got squashed. And now they're feuding with Big E. Are they feuding with him? They were saying a lot of shit about Big E. It seems like it's weird to have him have only one match and that'd be it. But they have – Miz has a singles match with Big E, and then they're immediately thrown into a tag feud with Heavy Machinery, with Otis and Tucker. So they're really – they're pulling like octuple duty. I mean, Miz and John Morrison, they're doing really good work with some of the shit that they're being given. But it's really crazy how few people they have on the roster that they need these guys to do everything. So it's Nikki Cross versus Bayley. Nikki Cross, of course, won this title shot by beating her friend Alexa Bliss last week, and we all wondered
You know, is this going to lead to Alexa turning on Nikki or Nikki turning on Alexa? Because there's no way Nikki Cross is beating Bayley, and that would be literally the fourth time in a month that Nikki Cross has been pinned by Bayley. That's one in a singles match versus right versus Bayley at the pay per view, one here, and then in tag matches. So she lost to Bayley four times in a month. That's it. There's no coming back from that. You got to figure out something to do besides what you've been doing with the character. You've decided, no, that's a dead end for the character now. So she does lose. Sasha's there and they're great. Sasha and Bayley are great together. I brought up the thing about Sonya Deville and I didn't even mention Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Those two, that's seven. And if you want to throw in Mandy Rose, that's eight. That's eight women who aren't four horsewomen who could have shit built around them. And if you want really to stretch it and say Nia Jax can be involved too as like somebody's heavy, fine. I'm deliberately excluding Lacey Evans and Dana Brooke and Tamina. Ruby Riott can be involved for all I care. Liv Morgan can be involved. All of these women have enough talent where if you use them properly, they could be in a position to wrestle for one of the three championships. Raw women's title, SmackDown women's title, women's tag titles. But you've decided, no, only two women can hold those titles. And anybody they go up against isn't qualified, and they will lose. I love Sasha and Bayley, but you're saying that those, what, now a dozen women? Why even bother showing up for work? That's what you're saying. That's weird. I don't like that. It's a match. It's a match that nobody was had any doubt about going into it, and she ducked a clothesline at the end, which is good, and she backslides Bayley. Bayley gets up and kind of weirdly twists her around into like a headlock driver. Like it looked like it's what Dean Ambrose used to do to win matches with before he did the Dirty Deeds. Anyway, Bayley wins and she and Sasha celebrate and they go backstage and Nikki's there and she's distraught. She doesn't know what to do. And Alexa's there and she feels really bad for her friend and Alexa comes up and she tries to like, hey, you know, I'll help you up. We're going to get through this together. This is not the end of the line for you. And Nikki doesn't accept that. And so she gets up and kind of like shoves Alexa away because she doesn't want to talk to anybody right now. This is all really well played, well executed. Great. And so Alexa's there by herself. And you think that's the end of the episode. Oh, this is sowing some, you know, some struggles, some, what's it called? Opening a rift between Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss. I really needed at that moment Michael Cole to give me a, is this the end for Bliss Cross Applesauce? But he didn't. Instead, it's Alexa Bliss alone in the ring. And SmackDown did something that genuinely shocked me. It's the old thing where you hear that, and then the lights start to go out. Like piecemeal, the Titantron goes out, the lights go out, and it's just Alexa Bliss. The lights go out and Alexa Bliss in the ring, like sitting down, basically. And the lights come back up.
And it's this is a fucking fantastic shot. And this is why it pisses me off when WWE fucks up so many other great shots. It's just her super tight on her face, and she is petrified because she knows what's standing right behind her in the red light, wearing his Beetlejuice pants, is the Fiend. And he gets down right next to her, right next to her. She can't look at him. She's so petrified by fear. And he takes his hurt glove and he holds it up. And I'm thinking to myself, they're not really going to fucking do this, are they? They're not actually going to do this, are they? And they did. Bray Wyatt gives Alexa Bliss the mandible claw, howling into the night. This is something that in the moment I really wish they had done. And I still think they could do it in the future. And I think it'd be really awesome if they did. When the lights came back up, I wanted Alexa to be in the ring alone and to look out into the audience, and all the audience, the entire audience, to be wearing Fiend masks. Just standing there, stock still, dead-eyed, looking at her through the plexiglass, and then all of them at the same time put their hands up on the plexiglass. Right? They're all wearing Fiend masks. In the red light, right? And the light goes out again, light comes up again, all of them are gone. But the Fiend is standing there behind her. Right? And I think it's the obsession with having an audience who can cheer and boo for things they like and don't like that ruins what you could do with a moment like this. If the Fiend briefly possesses everybody in the audience, all the PC kids, and then winks them out of existence so he can come back in his corporeal form to attack Alexa Bliss, that's so much more interesting than a bunch of kids standing outside going, "Boo, Fiend, we don't like you. No, that's boo. We don't like you, Fiend, boo." That has no bearing on anything. But if you give the Fiend supernatural powers in your taped show that's in your building where you control everything, it makes it so much fucking more interesting. The Fiend was dead to me for months. This moment last night when he attacked Alexa Bliss, for reasons we'll get into in a second, reminded me so much of the initial Fiend shit. Remember when he first came out for his first match, where we saw the goddamn head lantern for the first time, and he came out and he squashed Finn so hard he made him fuck off back to Full Sail? This reminded me of that Fiend. The one that was unspoiled by that fucking Seth Rollins shit. They put that hot shot of the title onto him. They didn't know what to do with it, so they just had him put it on fucking Bill Goldberg. This reminded me of that. That visceral... nausea. I don't like this at all. This is creepy and weird and fucked up. I mean, well, it's not even, we're not going to get into the whole, like, this dude forced his fingers in this woman's mouth, which is a different kind of assault. And the way, again, the way that Bray Wyatt has the Fiend just gutturally bellow when he's doing the mandible claw, it's almost like a sexual release. I'm serious. Like, it really is fucking creepy as hell when he does it to anybody. But when he does it to little Alexa Bliss, my God. And of course, she doesn't know why this is happening, because she doesn't know that Bray knows that Braun is secretly in love with Alexa Bliss. And Braun's obviously not at the bottom of the swamp. He's hiding because he doesn't want to see the Fiend. Because he's fucking afraid of the Fiend. So how do you get him out of hiding? You attack the woman he loves. Which is basically like, that's what most Batman movies are. That's the Joker kidnapping, you know? That's the Joker kidnapping Bruce Wayne's paramour du jour. How do you get to the guy? You hurt the people he loves. Like, Bray Wyatt just made the Fiend a fucking Batman villain. That's great! That's so great! I mean, that's... And again, I have to believe this is all Bray Wyatt's doing. It's too good for it to be Vince. He took shit that happened between Braun and Alexa on the goddamn mixed match challenge on Facebook Live 2 fucking years ago and has now turned it into the central reasoning for a feud between he and Braun now. That's so fucking great. Bray Wyatt pays attention to other people's little bits of story that they're putting into their shit years ago and says, let's bring it back now. That kind of long-term storytelling is Vince isn't capable of it because his brain doesn't think back that far. And so this is what I'm saying. I think that Bray Wyatt, who knows what everybody else is thinking, what their characters' motivations are, I think that Bray Wyatt should be in charge of creative. There, I said it. I think he has an innate sense for really good storytelling. I think a lot of the shit that does not work with Bray Wyatt is not on Bray Wyatt. I think he's an insanely creative dude. And he'd be so good at being able to help other people tell their story. He'd be so good at it. Like when he finally retires from in-ring work. And again, The Fiend is some shit you could do until you're 70. Just show up wearing the damn mask, wrinkled underneath it, give somebody the mandible claw and peace out. You could do that forever. But when he's done doing it wrestling full time, I hope he gets a chance to go backstage and make magic happen creatively with other people because I know he believes in it. Okay, so we have to talk about this stupid shit with the fucking financials, right? So they had to release everybody back in April in the middle of this, the height of the fucking pandemic. They had to, guys, because this is what I was told. They had to, because otherwise they're going to go bankrupt. I mean, this is the economy. It's going to tank. And what are we going to do? Pay people? We can't do that. We got to have to lay off everybody. We're going to furlough people who aren't wrestlers and just fire a whole bunch of wrestlers to say, you know what? Sorry, we can't do it. Nothing to be done. Can't do it. And so they made $40 million last quarter. $40 million was their profits. That's not what they made. That's more than what they spent is $40 million. And they're in some kind of stalemate negotiations of whether or not to pay Rey Mysterio more. I'm telling you this. Everybody who works in front of a camera for your company deserves double what you're paying them. And you would still come out ahead, Vincent. It's disgusting what this company and all major companies in this country are getting away with. Because in the eyes of corporations and the people who control them, the almighty dollar reigns supreme and fuck everybody else. So
even when SmackDown ends on an amazing note and has another segment in it that was that signified, I believe, the arrival of a new star heel that can push the women's division to new heights. Psycho Sonya, man, my God. On a night where that happened, and the Fiend mandible clawing Alexa Bliss to get to Braun Strowman happened. It happens in the midst of WWE continuing to WWE and screwing over their people who depend on them left and right. So, this has been Sour Grabs. I have been Alex Pulaski. And even when everything doesn't suck, everything sucks.